You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here to discuss our June 2026 book club pick, The Chosen and the Beautiful by Niamh Vo, a, I guess, semi-magical queer retelling of the Great Gatsby story. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon member, you can access to our members-only Discord server. We can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a quarterly Patron's Choice book club pick, the latest of which is our July book club pick that we'll be announcing at the end of this episode. But as always, before we get started, a quick spoiler warning. If you have not read The Chosen and the Beautiful, we will be covering all aspects of the book, including all plot twists. Although if you've went to high school in the States, chances are you've already read The Great Gatsby, the book that this book is based on. But, you know, in case you haven't read The Great Gatsby or watched any of the movies or musicals, we will be talking about all the plot and all the spoilers and all the character changes and updates involved in this version. So if you do care about being spoiled, this is your chance to hit pause on the podcast and come back when you finish the book. But other than that, yeah, Rira, can you start us off, as always, with the book jacket description of The Chosen and the Beautiful?
Jordan Baker grows up in the most rarefied circles of 1920s American society. She has money, education, a killer golf handicap, and invitations to some of the most exclusive parties of the jazz age. She's also queer, Asian, adopted, and treated as an exotic attraction by her peers, while the most important doors remain closed to her. But the world is full of wonders, infernal pacts and dazzling illusions, lost ghosts, and elemental mysteries. In all paper is fire, and Jordan can burn the cut paper heart out of a man. She just has to learn how. So this was Niamh Vo's first novel, and Niamh Vo had written a bunch of novellas before that. We've read the novella, The Empress of Salt and Fortune, as a previous book club pick. Fantasy is something that they have dabbled in for quite a while. So I was really surprised by how light the magic was in this book, because it is very different from previous works.
Yeah. I was also surprised how, I guess, incidental the paper magic actually was to the story. I mean, it was there, but it wasn't a driving force of any of the plot points. It kind of just added flavor. And, you know, we read The Empress of Salt and Fortune so long ago, so like it's been a while since I've read another Niamh Vo book, but I was reminded of just how skilled she is at like world building through her prose, right? One thing I really noticed was like there wasn't a lot of exposition, at least through dialogue, right? It was just like they exist in this world where there's magic, there are demonic packs, there's, you know, demon's blood as a beverage, that there's paper art magic. But it's not like, none of that is like, again, much like Jordan's own magic, none of that is like a central driving force. It's just how the world is, just how this world works. And I really enjoy that. But also, like, you know, we've been talking about like book talk stuff on our Boba chat. But I was thinking about those people that we talked about who like only read dialogue and skip the prose. I'm like, well, this book is not for them, right?
No, absolutely not. And like the prose is gorgeous. Niamh Vo like is probably one of like their prose is so lush and so cinematic. And like this book, it just, I don't know, it was just saturated in just yearning and just loss and grief. And I don't know, it's just like so beautifully written. I think there was like a quote that I highlighted from the book that was just like so beautiful. And it's about Daisy. She said things, they lit up gold in the air, and then they fell to nothing, like so much cigarette ash. And it's just so poetic.
It's like the perfect like style for a take on the Great Gatsby, right? Because it is very opulent, very lush, very descriptive, very like you can see the lights, you can see the colors, but you can also see kind of the emptiness inside of it too. Like she does a really good job like portraying those like the Gatsby vibes. And you know, I want to actually start with like a question that one of our Patreon members asked us on Discord. Basically, Nina, our book club member, says that when she first read the book, she was curious about what made this book a traditionally publishable story versus something that would need to be uploaded as fan fiction. She thinks it's pretty impossible to understand the story without having read The Great Gatsby. And during her second read, she even wished that the story was more integrated so that she can read both in chronological order. And I think it's interesting because I do wonder what it would be like to read this book without ever having read The Great Gatsby in the first place, which is kind of a hard thing to do, especially reading as people came up through the American school system where we all were kind of forced to read The Great Gatsby. And even if we didn't read it, we kind of understand the general beats, right? We know like the main plot, we know what it's about. We know what it's about, you know, the affluent New Yorkers and parties and, you know, someone gets murdered at the end, right? And then, you know, he dies at the end, right? We already did spoiler warning, but Jay Gatsby also dies in the end of this version as well. And I think I've been admitting myself that I don't really remember much about The Great Gatsby when I read in high school, but I do like reading through this version. I did remember things and ask like the chapter where they go out together, right? Tom, Gat, Jay, Nick, Daisy, and Jordan. I was like, oh, I know what's coming. And there was that sense of dread throughout that chapter when it's going to blow up. And I feel like I do wonder what it would be like if this book would still stand on its own if I didn't know the original story.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Nina on like all of her points, because it does kind of feel like fan fiction. And it is able to get published because The Great Gatsby is public domain, which is very interesting because it entered public domain in 2021 and this book got published in 2021. So it was just like perfect timing. I'm not sure if that had to do with, you know, anything in terms of like creative writing, because it's like, okay, like by the time this book comes out, it will be public domain.
It's the same circumstance of like, say, Wicked, right? Wicked came out after Oz went to public domain, right? I want to say that was the case.
Yeah.
And it's the same type of story, which is this classic story that's in like Americana, but through someone else's perspective who like can see the events of the story through a different lens, right? Because the original narrator, Nick Carraway, was kind of a blank slate, right? I think the general criticism is kind of like a nothing character, right? He's just like has stuff happen to him.
Yeah, and I do love how Nevo like brings that up, like Jordan Baker, our protagonist, says like, oh yeah, like Nick is so good at telling stories that, you know, belong to others. Like he tells them better than the original teller themselves. And I was like, yeah, he's definitely a wallflower that, you know, is kind of thrusted into this world. And, you know, there's like a lot of envy, but also because he's in the sidelines, he's able to notice like kind of like the rot and the emptiness and hollowness and just like the carelessness of the rich. And it's just funny because with this book, like Jordan Baker is now like the narrator, and also she's even more ostracized. She's more in the margins than Nick, even though she like grew up rich. So it's just like, okay. I do like how this book is emphasizing more of the female characters, because The Great Gatsby, the original text, I remember even as a high school student, I was like, man, this is such a dude bro book. And it's funny because like back then I didn't realize like the homoerotic tones. Like Like, I remember reading in high school being like, man, like, Nick is, like, so descriptive on, like, how these dudes look and, like, how, like, masculine and, like, attractive they are. Whereas, like, with the female characters, he barely, like, pays any attention to them. And now as, like, an adult with, like, a fully frontal lobe, I'm like, oh, no, like, it...
Yeah,
like they're gay, and this book was coming out during like censorship era. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the context of like, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald's sexuality, what it may or may not have been, him and his wife, and like all this other stuff. That was all this context that we now are more aware of, right? And the fact is that, like, yeah, like Nick Carraway as the narrator of The Great Gatsby sees everything through a Midwest ostensibly cishet like. Perspective.
Yeah, it's a very right? white, cishet, male point of view.
Yeah.
And he's kind of blind to his own privileges. And it's like, okay, like, let's do some reflection.
Yeah, and, you know, The Great Gatsby is considered one of the great American novels, right? So it's been, like, criticized, it's been analyzed to, like, through all sorts of lens. And, you know, one of the more interesting lenses is the feminist reading of The Great Gatsby and, like, the role of Daisy. And in some ways, the role of Jordan, right? Jordan, in the original book, was there to be kind of an example of, like, a social climber, right? A party girl, like, one of the flapper, like...
Yeah, she was, like, definitely, like, a flapper. Whereas, like, with Daisy, it's like, oh, she's, you know, a mother and a wife. And, of course, you know, she's, like, very innocent. And, like, there's kind of, like, a commentary on just like how certain white women from a certain background are kind of held on a pedestal as kind of like a trophy.
Yeah, I think very timely for our current discussion on like trad wife culture and traditions, oh, yeah. Right? But if you think about history at that time, and we also use this lens when we read like Austen books, right? It's like, what must it have been like to be a woman during that time and have these societal expectations on you? Like, no one wants to be a trophy, but in that time, that was how you survived, right? That's you know, women weren't allowed. I don't think women were allowed to, at least women. I mean, during that time, like, I think women of that station were allowed to work, right? Much like women in like Regency era, right?
They had just gotten, like, white women just got the right to vote. Because
yeah.
I remember they mentioned this in the book. Right, and Jordan is like, well, I mean, what does that have to do with me? Because I'm never going to be able to vote.
Yeah.
And I love like her. It sucks, but I love like her self-awareness on like her status. She's like, yeah, like even though I grew up in a rich family, like I look Asian. And therefore, you know, once I... Like when I was a young child, people saw me as like a pet and something that they can dress up and like I was cute. But then as soon as I became like a teenager, I can't go out to certain functions. I'm not like a debutante. Like I'm not going to get the same access as like the classmates I went to school with. It doesn't matter how witty, educated, pretty I am. Like I'm not going to have the same rights. And at the same time, that gives her some freedom because that like lets her, you know, go into risky relationships and, you know, sleep around and also just like go to places that Daisy can't really go to without like worrying about her reputation. Whereas with Jordan, it's like, what reputation? Like,
yeah,
doesn't matter.
I think Nevo writing Jordan as a Vietnamese American character is a much like that impacts the story much more than like the than any of the magic does, right? Like this fundamentally like changes like not only her perspective but also how she moves around the world and turns this like Great Gatsby retelling into also like an Asian American story, right? Storyline.
Yeah. And an adoptee, a trans racial adoptee story. And I feel like I was more interested in like Jordan's original like storyline, like about like her growing up in like the suburbs of Chicago, her relationship with Daisy growing up, and then like her, you know, her like flapper lifestyle in New York City, because when it went back to like the guys, like Tom, Gatsby, and Nick, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so bored. Like, I don't care about them. And even though, like, it's just like, oh yeah, like Gatsby and Nick, like they are more visibly queer and way more interesting to me in this version of The Great Gatsby. But at the same time, I'm like, dude, like I do not care about you guys. Like, you guys are just, you guys have so much privilege. You guys are able to like just sleep around and not like, and like not care. And you guys complain about like not having everything you want when like women are not able to like do half the things that you are legally able to do. So it's just like, like blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. Okay.
And the thing is, like, she has such like a rich life outside of those rich weirdos, right? She like goes to like underground clubs. She hangs out with her like witchy aunts, right? Like, she has such like a cool New York magical life. But Daisy, Gatsby, even Nick keep dragging her back into their drama, right? And she, I think, you know, part of it is also she's dealing with her, like, she still can't uncouple herself from that life because that's how, that was how she grew up in. Like, she, you know, there's this really cool scene where, like, she finally meets other Asians, other Vietnamese people, and she, like, she doesn't know how to act. And she feels very defensive around them because, like, they are more, so much more in touch with their heritage or culture than she is, and it kind of makes her feel like really, really anxious, right? But she's no less uncomfortable with Daisy, with Jay, with Nick, right? Like, maybe Nick like is a little better because Nick is like you said, a blank slate. And you know, I love the twist at the end about Nick. We can talk about that later on. But like, throughout the story, we learn about all like the things that she's done with Daisy, for Daisy. And like, you know, if you really pay attention, Daisy never really does anything for her, right?
No, she's definitely one of those people who like just use people for their own advantage.
Yeah, and she never asks,
and they think they can get away with it just because they're pretty and just because they cry. And I don't know, like Daisy is like such like a stereotypical like white woman who's like, white woman tears, you know, make it always make it about them. And yeah, like there's a scene where Daisy, she has to get like an abortive concoction because she got pregnant during like one of her flings, and she was careless, and she's like, oh, like I can't go in and like do it, you do it for me. And it's like, you don't care about your friend's reputation, how she looks being in this part of town and asking for like an abortion pill pretty much. And it's just like, yeah, you're just doing that because you're, because like honestly, like she could have just done it herself, but like she has like this idea of, well, you know, I'm too good for that, like,
yeah.
And she's like doing it to, you know, protect her image of being like this sweet debutante who, you know, is virginal and wants to marry into security, and that like risks everything. And I'm like, oh yeah, how fortunate that you have a friend that you can just use and not care about the consequences, just so you can protect your own status.
I mean, she thinks she's offering her like acceptance, inclusion, and in some ways because of their friendship, Jordan does get access to that world. But yeah, like she never does, like she never once asked Jordan what she wants to do. It's always what, like, I want to do this, come with me, right?
I think like it was, it like their first meeting when they were girls, when like Jordan like made like a paper lion and it comes to life, and then like they, like it catches on fire or whatever. Like I don't remember exactly what happened.
They set it
on
fire because they freaked out that it was coming to life.
Yeah. And then you know, the fire is put out, and like the adults like come upstairs, are like, what happened? Like, we heard screaming, and then like Daisy immediately turns on the waterworks, is able to cry on the spot, and she, you know, deflects blame. And I was like, wow. She is so manipulative, even at this age. And like, I don't know if it's because like it's like intentional or it's just like innate nature. But I was like, wow, that's like so malicious. And like it really sets the tone for how Daisy and Jordan's relationship is going forward.
Like, yeah,
she's always going to be that girl who, you know, turns on the waterworks as soon as it's, you know, bad for her.
Yeah. And, you know, it's true to her. I mean, I feel like what I really found like kind of masterful is like all of the characters, you know, Gatsby, Tom, Daisy, even Nick, they're so like they're so true to their characters in the original text. Right. Same characterizations. They exist in this world where there's magic and demons and where there's magic and demons. But they're still fundamentally the same characters. And in some ways, Jordan is also fundamentally the same character that they see through the original text. It's just we now have access to her interiority, where it's like she is not just a social climber, but also like she's trying to survive. Right. She's trying to just live in this world that she doesn't know how to live otherwise because she was plucked from the world she was supposed to grow up in.
Yeah. And also there's like this added context of the Manchester Act, which is pretty much a Chinese exclusion act.
I think it's like Chinese exclusion like 2.0, right? Because Chinese exclusion already
happened. It's like all Asian people. Like, yeah, it's like all Asian people,
and
all
demons,
people who
magic,
are like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's just so funny because like Tom would say really racist things in front of Jordan. And he's like, yeah, we need the Manchester Act because, you know, like foreigners, it's bad. It's like they're going to like make the white race disappear or something like that. And then like Jordan says sarcastically, she's like, wow, what are we going to do? And he's like, you know, I'm not talking about you. And it's like, wow, that's such like a token, like, yeah, we've all been there. If you're someone who is in a marginalized group, you've definitely have been in that position where someone says something that's like very, very like red flag. And then you're just like, well.
I mean, that is Jordan's role in this retelling, is she is the token of her like of her friend group, her social circle. And I also found it really interesting that every time she went to another place, like another location, she always gets mistaken for the other local Asian girls from that neighborhood.
Yeah. And like, it's also like offensive to her because she's like, look at how fabulously dressed I am. Look at like how like chic I look. Why do you think that I am like someone who works at a laundry? And
yeah. There's definitely some internalized stuff that she also needs to work through and I think is going to work through based on like how the book ends.
Yeah, I mean, there's a passage that says like, oh, she doesn't like going to Chinatown because she feels less special when she's there. And I was like, that is an experience that even Asian Americans can feel these days, because there's definitely Asian Americans out there who lean more towards like white supremacy. Like even if it's like not like full MAGA, it's just like they believe that being a WASP is like the ideal life. And there's just like a lot of internal racism. And also because this is the Great Gatsby, classism is a big theme in this book. So also it's like that layer of like,
yeah,
oh, like this is kind of like the slums, like I don't belong here. I'm like better than them. I don't want to be lumped in with the poor Asians. And I think it's also pretty cool that like the book is very specific about her being Vietnamese, like Tonkin, which was like the colonial term for it back then. I didn't even know that word. I was like, what the fuck is this? But it's like, yeah, like we get mistaken as Chinese, as like she's like, I'm not Chinese, I'm Vietnamese. And it's like, it doesn't matter to these people because they don't know the difference or they don't really care.
Yeah. And even her origin story is like shrouded in like, it's opaque, right? Like her adoptive mom says, oh, like we rescued you, but then if you really
you were my
think
favorite
it,
baby. Yeah. And it's just like, what does that mean? Did you like, it doesn't sound like
she definitely got
an
human
actual adoption.
Out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like one thing about The Great Gatsby that like people always mention is that it was a contemporary book of its time. Like it came out in 1925 and the book is set in like 1921. And, you know, it's like right before the Great Depression. So it's like such a it's just like a sliver of time that's like so specific that's just like distilled into like this one time capsule. And we get like so much of like the 1920s atmosphere and like culture and details just from this short book. And I think Nevo did like a really good job kind of like continuing that level of detail. I think she puts more detail into like the fashion and like just like the music of the era, but yeah. it's just like she wouldn't have been able to write that without like that reference from the original text.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I remember, again, I don't really remember all, like, everything that I read. But, like, I remember, like, The Great Gatsby is not, it's a very short book, too, right? It's like
it would be a novella in this day and age, which is funny because Nevo started off as a novella writer and The Great Gatsby is pretty much a novella. It's, like, a very short book. It's around, like, 150 pages.
Yeah, and you know, I definitely agree with you that like Nevo's description of the Gatsby parties was like, those were some like, you know, like those were some very like vivid scenery and vivid descriptions. Especially like the magical things that happen around, like the fact that like the rooms are themselves magical and transport you to different places. The fact that like the musicians can play, you can see the notes that the musicians play. Like there's a lot of really cool like, you know, I can't imagine, because like, I do imagine scenes when I read, so it was really, really cool in my head. But like, you know, like the scenes I played in my head were like even more fantastical than the ones from the Baz Luhrmann like film version.
Yeah, I said, I expected more magic in this book. And but at the same time, I can understand the choices that Nevo made with like, you know, like you are able to see the notes that the musicians play. Like a lot of the magic is very much shallow and like stuff that the rich people use. It's a novelty. It's not like,
yeah,
life changing. It's almost like secondhand drugs. Like it's just like, oh, this magic is just for the amusement of the privileged and the rich. And I was like, I understand why the magic was like written that way. I just wish there was like more examples of like how magic can be used by like more magic in like daily usage outside of just like parties and being drunk, drugging it up. I was kind of confused by the demoniac because I'm like, okay, there are demons in this world and like people drink the blood and it's like,
yeah, they get high.
It's like getting high on like cocaine or heroin. And I'm just like, okay, but like, where's the demon blood coming from? And I just like kept thinking about like what the magical system and logic is like, but you can't do that when it's light fantasy.
I actually didn't mind that. I liked that it was in the background. And, you know, once I clocked that this was how it was going to be, like, I stopped, I guess, expecting it to be, like, a more central part of the book. I think the you know, the fact that, like, you know, part of the Manchester Act is expelling all people without souls, right? And, like, you learn about, like, how, like, yeah, there's, like, Faustian bargains in this book. And in this version of The Great Gatsby, Jay Gatsby is not, like, he is not a bootlegger with the mob. He is a agent of a, you know, he literally made a deal with the devil, right, to gain the means to get his dream girl Daisy, which, you know, is not that far away from like his original deal from the original text, right? It's just more like,
yeah, in the original text it's pretty much like he is a bootlegger and he's involved with the mob and that's how he got his wealth. And during like it's prohibition time, even though people are getting drunk everywhere, it's like,
yeah,
alcohol is technically illegal, so he is making bank off of that. And
the reason he does that is still just to like be able to become a man worthy of Daisy, right? Because that is the object of all his desires, is this one girl he met before he went to war.
Yeah, yeah. And also it's, you know, he he wants that status. He wants to be considered one of the aristocrats. And that was the American dream back then in like the 1920s. It was like, oh, you can, you know, have a poor background, but work hard enough and you will be able to be at the top of the, you know, top of the food chain. But the aristocrats are like, Novo rich, like you don't belong here. You guys like money can't buy taste. And I think this is where I feel like the Great Gatsby kind of loses its relevance in today's like today's society, because like American Dream is very different from what it was in the original text.
I mean, that's the thing, right? I think even in the original text, like if you go back and, you know, like thinking back on like the Great Gatsby and like how it concludes, it's fundamentally a very cynical take on that American dream, right? Like even, and that's something that this version captures very well through Jordan's observations too. It's like all these rich people have miserable lives. Like they have nothing to live for. Everything is just so shallow. And that's kind of how Nick ends up also at the end after Gatsby gets killed because, was it Myrtle? Myrtle is the mistress?
Myrtle is the mistress of Tom.
Yeah, at the end when Jay gets murdered by Myrtle's husband, and it's like, yeah, like I think in that book it's like we're funneling like us as like Midwesterners are like fundamentally not suited for the New York life, but it was also very cynical of that like New York lifestyle, that aristocratic lifestyle. And in a way it's like we see that tradition. It was one of the first books of like the not really like Eat the Rich, but like Eat the Rich Light, like shows like The White Lotus also trade in this, which is like, look at how amazing these people, these rich people's vacations are. Look at how like opulent everything is. But also they're all terrible people that hate each other and hate their lives, right?
Yeah. And also, you know, like I said, the looming Great Depression. I mean, I'm pretty sure like F. Scott Fitzgerald did not know that the stock market was going to crash and like everything was going to be miserable for like 15 years and change the trajectory of like American history and economy for forever. But like the sense was there. It was like, this is not sustainable. Like these parties and also like just this lifestyle of living carelessly and not caring about consequences. Like it's not sustainable even for rich people. Like you will get your comeuppance. Like you will get the hangover from drinking the previous night. And I mean, this is a tangent. We're going back to Gatsby here, but I thought it was really interesting that like it's revealed that the parties was a way for more souls to be sold. So it was kind of like, it was just like, oh yeah, like let's invite everyone who have like some kind of depravity and there'll be a chance for them to sell their soul to the devil. So he was pretty much like a human trafficker, a soul trafficker.
He's like, yeah, he was the demon's,
he was the pimp,
like soul broker essentially, right? And that was his Faustian bargain, right? We're gonna give you this amazing mansion, we're gonna give you all this power, you supply us with souls and you can go, you know, go chase the girl of your dreams. And I think it was implied that like after he like quote unquote got Daisy, he stopped doing the parties, right? And then that's why,
yeah. And that's why like he kind of got in trouble. It's just like, hey, hold up your side of the bargain. And I do like how in this version of The Great Gatsby, Gatsby's love for Daisy is like more obsession. Like we already get that from the original text. We're just like, this is not a normal, healthy relationship. It's unrequited love. But then here it's like taken to the extreme of like he doesn't really care about Daisy's feelings. He just wants to possess her because like that is his American dream. And Daisy is like, as a character in this book, she is very indecisive, which is like her original character's traits. But at the same time, like in this version, we kind of get to see like why she's so indecisive. It's because there's just so little choice as a woman during this period. And it's just like, okay, do I go with this man and for and like lose all my security, lose my family, lose my status, my lifestyle? Or do I go into this marriage with a stranger and possibly have like a miserable life, but also all the comforts that I'm used to growing up with?
Yeah, I mean, she's drawn to Gatsby because Gatsby very loudly proclaims his love for her. And that's something that she, it intrigues her, right? It's something that she doesn't really get from Tom. Going back to Gatsby, though, I did find it interesting seeing his, like, his pursuit of Daisy through the eyes of Jordan, who by nature is also a very cynical, like, a cynical observer. And, like, the fact that, like, you know, the fact that all, everything he does to, like, contrive this, like, meet-cute happenstance just felt so forced from her perspective. Like, dude, just merely go talk to her. But, like, no, I need to accidentally run into her while hanging out at Nick's house. And, like, it needs to happen in this certain way. I thought that was really, like, that was a really funny way to kind of, like, flip the perspective. Like, someone else looking at, and have someone else looking at, like, this, like, person trying to manufacture this meet cute.
That's like, yeah, and also, like, Daisy knowing that, you know, he's gonna be there. And it's just, like, he was telling Jordan, like, don't tell Daisy because it would ruin, like,
the game,
the magic,
right?
The whimsy of it.
It reminds me of, like, those, like, I had a friend back in college who, like, who got really into, do you remember the book The Game?
It's like, is this the pickup artist game?
Pickup artist book. Yeah. He read that cover to cover and immediately said, hey, let's go out tonight.
Oh,
and of course, I said yes because I wanted to see him crash and burn.
You wanted to see the train wreck? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I do love how in this version, Gatsby is very pathetic. And
yeah.
It's like very emphasized, whereas like in the original text, I don't know, like I feel like there's still this kind of like, wow, look at him doing all this for his great love, like because it's written from Nick Carraway's point of view. And I'm like, OK, I mean, obviously you have feelings for Gatsby. And in this book, they do sleep with each other. They do have like a gay romance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, apparently next to me is sleeping around everywhere. But that's,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
What did you think about the twist at the end when we find out that Nick Carraway is not actually Nick Carraway?
I was really confused because that just means the twist is that Nick has been a paper magic puppet this entire time, and like the real Nick Carraway died at war, and like his parents somehow like got someone to create a paper version
of
him.
His grandmother was Asian, so I guess I think that was what it was implying, that his grandmother was able to cast a paper magic spell to bring another version of him back.
Yeah. And I don't know like what version of the book you guys have, but my version that I bought through like Google Books, it has an essay that Nevote wrote for tor.com, and it's about like the tradition of paper cutting and like paper art in Vietnam. And I was like, oh, it's like cool that she like brought this custom and this tradition as like something magical. How did I feel about like only the Asians being able to do this? Like, I don't know, like there was just some part of me that was like, oh, the mystical Asians. Ooh, I don't know about this. But at the same time, I'm like, well, this is where Jordan is able to connect with her heritage. So, like, I shouldn't feel so bad about it.
I think it works as an allegory of, like, the part of her heritage that she is suppressed that is only useful when instrumentalized by, like, Daisy, right? And she's, like, something that she kind of actively tries not to think about, tries not to do anything about, tries not to use, because she doesn't know how it works, how she can do it, and B, she doesn't know how much, like, and B, like, it sets her apart from everyone else. Like, it makes her, you know, quote unquote, weird, right?
Yeah. But going back to, like, Paper Nick, I mean, I guess, like, the whole thing is, like, well, he can't give his whole heart to anyone because he's not real. and like all the relationships that he has is like in some way surface level. And I guess that's just like a metaphor for like how these rich people are just like having mistresses and affairs, and it really doesn't mean anything, even when they think it means something.
I just thought it was such a clever way to explain why Nick was such a blank slate in the original text, right? Why he is the way he is in the original novel. And it's because he's a paper man. Like, he just feels everything so much, and he loves everyone so much. And that is the logical, and this provides like a logical, magical explanation for why he's the way he is.
What did you think about Paper Daisy? Because that was like a big scene in this book during like the flashbacks.
Yeah, I thought that was really like, you know, it gave an example of how powerful Jordan's magic could be. Like, she can literally conjure up a person that can pass as a real person. I think it's you know, and that in some ways it is like kind of a Chekhov's gun for the Nick Carraway reveal right later on. I was a little flabbergasted at the way that scene ended, like how they got rid of Paper Daisy. I did not expect so much violence in that chapter.
I really like that was my favorite scene in the entire book, where Daisy gets a shovel and pretty much goes ham on her paper self and murders her like brutally, because I think the reason why she like really hated that paper version of her was like the fact that no one could tell that that wasn't her. She was like, wow, like I'm just like this paper cutout character to most people. Like, I don't have agency, I don't have like any depth past like what I present to other people. And it was just like a culmination of just like grief and like feminine rage coming forth. And I was like, wow, okay. Like,
yeah, it's definitely a scene late filled with metaphor, right? Because there's that reading of it, but there's also like it also shows that she completely like, she doesn't care that her friend was able to create like essentially this miracle, because it was just a means to an end. And she like destroys it without any concern or any thought about how Jordan might feel about seeing something she made get like brutally murdered like that as well. And, you know, I guess in a way it's, you know, it's do we call this like a metaphor, allegory for like white feminism?
Yeah. Also just like toxic friendships, you know, like you'll always have like there's always that toxic friend in your life that's going to like hate the things that you make of yourself, and they'll always like hold you down. Like with the paper magic, Jordan uses it again when like the hit and run happens. When the hit and run happens, Daisy is in the car and she runs over Tom's mistress. Gatsby takes the fall for it. You know, everybody thinks that he drove the car and not Daisy. Jordan goes up to a billboard that was like facing in that direction. It has like, you know, it's like of a person. So she's like, okay, let me create a...
Like, it's like, when you think about the Great Gatsby, you think about those eyes, because it's like... It was on the cover, right, of the original book, the eyes of this billboard. It's the billboard. I was kind of surprised that it didn't show up in this book until like the end here.
Yeah. I mean, like, I forgot how Nick finds out about like the truth behind the hit and run, probably talking to Daisy and Gatsby at some point. But Jordan uses this magical element where she creates a mouth for the billboard, and she's like, hey, tell me what you saw. And that's how she finds out that Daisy was the one who was driving the vehicle and not Gatsby. And I don't know, it's like the beginning of the end in that regard. She's just like, okay, like my friend murdered someone, like an actual person and not like a paper person.
Well, I actually just really like that scene. Like, it's such like, again, Nevo is such a visual, like she can write, she's so good at writing like visuals and like just imagining the scene where like she cuts this like jagged mouth for this billboard and it kind of opens and talks. It reminds, like, I mainly went to like those old like fantasy movies like Neverending Story or like Oz. It's like kind of just like, or even like a Ghibli, right? Just like a very whimsical, like, but also kind of fucked up image of like this billboard talking.
Yeah. And this kind of marks like the beginning of the end at this point, because the Manchester Act just goes through and she finds out, okay, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I guess I should leave. And, you know, she is like reinforced in that decision with her aunt, who is like, hey, go to Shanghai and just like wait it off until you're welcome back, because you have money, you have like, you have options. And then there's like the Vietnamese Chinese paper troop that she befriends through Gatsby's party and through her time in Chinatown. And they're just like, hey, we have to leave because of this act has been, because of this act. So you're free to come with us. And it's like her first time being with other people that like look like her and have like the same magical ability as her. And she's like, okay, maybe this is a way for me to find out what home is.
I mean, I think it's specifically Kai who invites her over, like the guy that she meets at the party, the performer. I think the other members of the troupe are still warming up to her at this point.
Warming up to her.
But I do think, I don't know if it's like on a whim, but like, I think at this point, she's been thoroughly disillusioned with like just everything, right? With Gatsby like turning out to just be a simp, right? Of Daisy just like not really like realizing that this friendship isn't really a friendship. Like there's like she's gonna stay with Tom because she's stuck there. And if Jordan stays, she's gonna be stuck with Daisy and nothing's gonna change, right? And like, I think the Manchester Act becomes like a catalyst for her to like, this is how I can break ties. This is how, like, because I have to leave now. And I don't know if I'm ever going to come back. This is like a reason for me to get away from all these things that she has realized. It's also like a prison for her, right? This like this American dream, this opulent Long Island, New York lifestyle. She's not getting anything out of it, right? She's just like, she's just surviving. And
she's a guest, essentially.
And she wants to do more than just survive, right? She wants to do more than just live off the scraps of others. And, you know, part of it's also like when she drove out to kind of ascertain the truth about the accident, she also, I don't remember the specifics, but she conjures like a spirit or like a deity that kind of shows her images of her past, right? And the truth of like, yeah, she was stolen from her parents, right? She her parents didn't sell her. Like she was taken. And like just all these things kind of like confirms what she's always kind of known. It's like she does not belong here. She never did. And her being here is also like unnatural.
Yeah. And I think I really like the way the book ended. Like,
yeah,
her resolve to like leave America, and she has like that one final meeting showdown with Daisy. Daisy, you know, this entire time was just like, I'm gonna leave Tom. I'm gonna go with Gatsby because he loves me. And then shit hits the fan, Myrtle. Like she murders Myrtle, and then Gatsby gets killed, and she's just like, whatevs, we're moving out of Long Island, we're going back to Chicago. And it's just like, wait, I thought this was a man that you absolutely loved, and you're just kind of like, you know, pretending that it didn't happen, and that it was just like a inconvenience in a way.
I mean, rich people live by different rules, and these are like inconsequential. I did like that. And I don't know if this is how you read it, but like at the end, did she sick Myrtle's ghost on Tom and Daisy?
I don't remember. I honestly do not remember, but that would be on point, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, you just think you can just abandon consequences here? Absolutely not. Like, let's make sure you're haunted forever.
Yeah. Yeah. She remains petty till the end, which I think is also like a good, like, yeah, I really love how she kind of just remains petty till the end. That's always going to be a part of her
character. Also, like, this is the moment this is the moment when she realizes, like, oh, I've stayed this entire time and done so many things for Daisy because I'm in love with her. And the only reason why I know that I was in love with her is because I'm out of love with her right now. And I was like, wow, it's like such like an interesting moment,
yeah.
Right? Like you discover that you once loved someone, and then now like you're just like, I can see who you are. And Daisy really shows her true self when she is like in crisis and when she's like breaking down and in tears.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that is just Jordan is someone who has been deprived of love for so long that like she sees Daisy's attention as like something she desires, right? I mean, you know, Great Gatsby is all about desire. And like for Jordan, it's always been a place or a person to belong to.
Yeah. And now she's just like, okay, like you are a terrible person. I'm going to go and see the world and rediscover who I was supposed to be. And I think that's really great. And it kind of fits into the whole Asian American story of just like, yeah, let's go back to the homeland and, you know, figure out where we come from.
Or let's stop playing by like everyone, someone
stop
else's
putting white
rules,
people
right?
on a pedestal.
Yeah. like we can create our own story. We can make our own community. We can find our own way without having someone like, without being someone else's like token.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do I think that people will get mileage out of this book if they have not read The Great Gatsby before? I don't know. I feel like you'll enjoy it, but at the same time, you won't get everything out of it. And
yeah.
I feel like the way to read this book is to definitely read The Great Gatsby first, because there are like Nevo does take like literal scenes from the original book, like copy paste, and then like add it in, add some like magic and like put it in Jordan's perspective. Like it is like the exact same scene, just a different angle. And it's like, yeah, like I feel like you need that reference to see like how Nevo like subverted a lot of things. So yeah, that's my answer. You should read The Great Gatsby. And I don't think this book would be all that much of a productive read without that reference.
Yeah, I mean, this book is definitely in conversation with the original text. And like, I think it's hard for us to think about what it would be like if we haven't read The Great Gatsby, just because Great Gatsby is just so ubiquitous in like the American canon. Like, even if you haven't read The Great Gatsby, you've heard of The Great Gatsby.
The movie like, came out.
Yeah, it's one of those stories where you learn through osmosis, right? Because it's kind of like, it's so ingrained in like the American story. So like I am curious if any of our listeners, if you had not ever read The Great Gatsby and then you came into this book, what it was like, because I think at its core, the story is still the same. This is a story about outsiders observing how miserable rich people are, how like the American dream is like just like, there's nothing at the end of it. And like, it's not worth giving up everything for. And, you know, again, we see like the themes, like The Great Gatsby, like this type of narrative lives on today in a lot of like our, in media as well, right? A lot of stories that are about like how rich people lead empty lives, how they're just miserable. And they just like, the things that matter to them, like is so out of touch. Those all shows like Succession, shows like White Lotus, those stories all have roots in The Great Gatsby and that story. And I think this is another worthwhile entry into that canon of approaching this classic story through like a different lens, through a queer, feminist, Asian American lens, which for me as an Asian American or someone who grew up Asian American was a much more interesting point of view than like the original Nick.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, when we see images, like, photographs of the 1920s, when we think about flappers, it's usually just, you know, thin white women who are from rich backgrounds. And it's like, oh, it's cool that we get, like, this image of this beautiful East Asian woman in, like, these fabulous flapper clothes and, like, you know.
Yeah.
is dressed to the nines. Like, there's opulence. There's, like, she's so chic and cool. And I'm like, yeah, we didn't have that. We could not imagine ourselves in that type of setting. So it's cool that this book allows us to kind of fantasize ourselves in that time period, because, you know, like, people, I feel like people who say, like, oh, like, I would love to like time travel back to like the flapper days because they threw like great parties. I'm like, I mean, if you're white, if you're straight, like, you could probably get access, but for a lot of us, we can't time travel. And I mean, none of us can time travel, but I'm just saying that if we had the ability to time travel, we would not be partying. Equally.
We would be like, you know, washing our clothes and speaking of like the Asian American narrative, one thing that I did like get a, I don't know if it's a chuckle or like kind of uncomfortable chuckle, but when she goes to visit the troupe in Chinatown and like kind of essentially parties with them, I was like, everyone else besides Kai was kind of being a dick to her, kind of gatekeeping, and kind of like, it reminds me of like you shouldn't shame people for not being in touch with the culture, especially if they're like adopted or like grew up in like a place where they were the only Asian. Like I do hope that if they ever connect again in Shanghai, that they're more like accepting or at least nicer to her for like being
essentially whitewashed, they were definitely right? hazing her. And you know, like, that behavior still exists today. Like, there are definitely Asian Americans who are just like, oh, you don't know this from like our culture, like where have you been?
Yeah,
under a rock. And it's like, I mean, I've definitely been guilty of doing that to other people, but it's just like, we need to be a little bit more gracious towards other people who like may have not had the same access, or, you know, like they're adoptees and, you know, they didn't grow up in an environment where there were other Asian Americans who could like teach them about their heritage. Right. It's like, you can't judge them too harshly on that.
Because like the fact that Jordan's there in a place that makes her uncomfortable because she is interested in learning more about this thing that she can do from people who do it like naturally. And she's there because she wants to like connect somehow. Like, she still has a prickly exterior, but like, she wouldn't be there if she didn't want to be with you guys, right?
I mean, at least she was able to hold her liquor for a while, because they were just like, oh, like, you flapper girl, like, here, drink some baijiu. And it's like, I'm like, wow, that's just straight up alcohol. Yeah. Like, that's like 30% alcohol. Like, shouldn't just be throwing those back as if they're champagne. But she was able to hang in there, and I think they were a little bit impressed. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
A way to impressing an Asian crowd is,
don't mess with the party girl, is all I gotta say.
Yeah. Your ability to drink.
Yeah.
At least in an East Asian culture.
Yeah. And I guess on that note, that'll do it for our discussion of The Chosen and the Beautiful by Ni Bo. Any final thoughts about the novel?
I had a good time. Like I said, I kind of wish it was more about Jordan and her original storyline rather than like being so strictly tied with the Great Gatsby story, because that's when I felt like it was kind of like dragging. And because I didn't like Tom, Daisy, or Nick, I'm like, I don't care about like their relationships with each other. Like, I felt like these people were so messy, but they were just so draining. And I know that's the point of their characters, but I was just like, these messy bitches, I don't want to read about them. So yeah, there's like, that's like my major qualm about this book, but I really did like enjoy the setting, enjoy Jordan being a queer Vietnamese American woman who, you know, live in the margins and is, you know, the narrator of the story. And I do wonder, like, if in the future classrooms will supplement their literature classes with The Great Gatsby and this book, because I feel like that would bring up interesting conversations in the classroom.
Yeah, I guess that'll depend on how the whole book banning situation goes in the Supreme Court. But yeah, I definitely had a great time reading this as well. Again, Nevo's prose is just so beautiful. The way that she describes, you know, Gatsby's parties, New York, Chinatown. It was just a great experience to read. And I really did enjoy, like, as someone who does enjoy, like, meta literature, like, I did enjoy the conversation that this book has with the original text and, like, how it approaches the same themes through a different perspective and how that makes everything a little bit more richer. So I really enjoyed this, and I'm really curious to hear what all our other members thought about the book as well. And I'm really eager to hear what our listeners thought as well. So yeah, as always, if you have any comments or feedback on either the book itself or on our discussion of it, please let us know on Discord or on Goodreads. We always love to hear your feedback on our episodes. We always love to hear and read your feedback on our discussions. But yeah, that'll do it for our discussion of The Chosen and the Beautiful by Nevo. I guess before we go, it's time to announce our July 2026 book club pick, which is our latest Patron's Choice book club pick. If you follow us on Instagram, you already know what book we're reading. But for the month of July, to kick off the summer season, we are reading Sunshine Nails by Mai Nguyen. It is a story about a Vietnamese Canadian family who comes together to save their family's nail salon when an ultra glam chain salon opens across the street.
It's another story about the immigrant family business versus gentrification, which is so relatable during this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is very fitting for summer, and I do enjoy that there is, like, for each month, like, the previous book club pick, there's like a thread that joins, because, like, this one was I'm trying to remember what it was like No No Boy the previous month, and then we're like, okay, we're gonna still stay in, like, in the relatively, like, same time, the
early
period.
1900s, yeah.
Yeah, early 1900s, or, like, we're going to stay there. And now, like, we are jumping to another, like, Vietnamese diasporan story. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, little chains. It's not intentional, guys. Like, we pick these book club picks just willy-nilly.
Yeah, I am curious on whether or not this book actually takes place during the summer club, because our last Patron's Choice summer pick was Bingsu for Two by Sujin Witherspoon, which on paper sounded like it would have been a summer book, but actually takes place in fall/winter. So, like, you know, this book has the word sunshine in it, but we'll see if it actually takes place during the summer. But regardless, it sounds like a great summery thematic read for our book clubs. I'm excited to get into it with y'all. The reading schedule for this book is up on Discord and Instagram, so if you are a book club member, I look forward to reading along with y'all and discussing. I look forward to reading along and discussing with you guys throughout the month. But with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba, and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Asians in Baseball alongside Naomi Koh and Scott Okamoto. Asians in Baseball is exactly what it sounds like, a podcast about the Asian and Asian Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Americans in Major League Baseball. Every week, we break down the highlights of what's going on with Asians in baseball and then take a deeper dive into the Asian and Asian Americans past and present who have shaped baseball as it is today. Whether you're Kim Eng's number one fan or you've never even heard of Hideo Nomo, we've got something for everyone, especially for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Maybe too much for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Listen to Asians in Baseball wherever you get podcasts, part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hey, I'm Phil Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We've got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation.
The good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallusbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.